I cannot tell you what a joy it is for Connie and I to be back and to see so many loving, familiar faces. And I can also tell you that the last verse to that song really is my testimony this morning. Great things He hath taught us, great things He hath done, and great our rejoicing through Jesus our Son, but purer and higher and greater shall be our wonder, our transport, when Jesus we see. I want to express gratitude to Mike and Tim, especially for the extra load that was on them while I was gone, and many of you stepped in. I want to express appreciation on behalf of Connie and me for the elders and all of you allowing us that time away. It came at a very opportune and strategic moment in our lives, and I want to share that with you this morning. It's been an incredible odyssey, a journey that God has taken me through that probably began a year or so ago, and I believe culminated the last couple of weeks of September. And I would be remiss not to share that with you. The last time I was in this pulpit, I cried tears of disappointment with God and disappointment about circumstances in life. And any crying that I do this morning are tears of joy, and I want to assure you of that, because I have seen God's faithfulness. I've experienced His love. I've experienced His presence. And I feel a little bit like Moses coming down from Mount Sinai. My heart is so full this morning. And I just thank God for you people and the testimony that Wayside Chapel has around the world and in Romania. And I want to share some of that with you this morning as well. But I want you to turn your Bibles to Psalm chapter 40, verses 1 through 3, because this became my prayer a couple of months ago, and some of you were praying particularly for my restoration. And God led me to make this my daily prayer. And the text goes like this: I waited patiently for the Lord, and He inclined unto me, and He heard my cry, and He brought me up also out of a horrible pit, out of the miry clay, and He set my feet upon a rock, and He established my goings, and He's put a new song in my mouth, even praise to our God, and many shall see it and fear and trust in the Lord. And I know this was a messianic psalm that would refer to what Jesus would do in His suffering, His death, His resurrection, and then the aftermath of His resurrection. I know it was also an experience that God allowed the psalmist David to go through. Many question what it might have been. It may have been some sickness in his life from which God delivered him. It might have been during the time when he was running from Saul, and he was just emotionally and physically and spiritually exhausted, and he was in a pit, and he couldn't get out of that pit. And folks, that's where I was, in a pit. And I share this, my journey this morning, for those of you who might be nearing the pit. You're walking along in life and you don't even realize there's a pit out there that's just waiting for you to fall in it. Or maybe you see the pit coming. Or maybe you've already started to fall into the pit and you're looking for some hope this morning. Perhaps you're down in the pit and nobody can get you out. I tell you, nobody can get you out but God. And I discovered that, but He will incline unto us and hear our cry. I want us to pray. Father, my heart is so full because You have been so faithful. And may every word that's spoken glorify You. Without You, I am nothing. I can do nothing. I have nothing to offer to hungry people. But I know there are some things that You want to say through me this morning. So I pray that they would be clear, that they would be words of compassion, of sensitivity, and yet words of boldness. And only You, through Your Spirit, can do that. Help all of these folks to know how much I love them and how grateful I am to be back here and to be honored to be in their presence and to stand before them. I'm humbled and I'm honored by all of this. So undeserving. I thank You. A couple of weeks ago, I had the opportunity to address what many called maybe the most strategic conference in all of Eastern Europe, group of perhaps 1,200 pastors and missionaries, and how I fell into that responsibility I'll share with you later. It was primarily through you people and your faithfulness that God gave me that opportunity. And I began my second session with them by saying, I want you men to know, I've gone through an experience in my life and I'm just coming out of where I lost my passion for God. And I was reminded of that this morning. How much I enjoyed singing those great hymns this morning. And there was a time in my life 2 or 3 months ago where there was no feeling there. The words didn't mean anything to me. I lost my passion for God and I lost my compassion for people. I was in a terrible pit. I was in an awful fix. And after I was over the finish, the interpreter said, I am so glad you shared that with these men because many of them are in the pits. And they needed to hear that. That even in the West, you experience the pits. But I'm here to tell you, folks, God is so faithful to His promises. And there's 3 parts to this psalm, and I've experienced all of them, and I share them with you this morning. He said, I waited patiently. Literally, it's in the Hebrew, I expected. I just remained in a state of expectedness. And then he said, God did come through in His time, and He inclined unto me, and He heard my cry, and then He delivered me. He brought me up also out of this horrible pit, out of the miry clay. And He set my feet up on a rock, and He established my goings, and He's put a new song in my mouth and new joy that's there that wasn't there before. I don't know if you've ever been in the pits. Pits are not comfortable places. In fact, when you're in a pit, nobody even sees you. You're out of sight. You're invisible to people. You're lonely. You're isolated. You're cut off. Pits are not great places to be. We call it self-pity sometimes, and yes, that's part of it. But we just lose our way. We lose our focus. And when David says here a horrible pit in the Hebrew, he's talking about a noisy chasm. He's picturing maybe rushing waters, all of these sounds that are just crowding him out and crushing him down and causing him to lose his way, voices perhaps. That he's confused. He's in a state of confusion and he just hears noise. He's disoriented, disillusioned, disconnected. Well, folks, that was me. And I'm not being dramatic this morning. That was me. And I had a lot of time to just get away and reevaluate where I am in my life and what I want God to do with my life. And God met with me. He inclined unto me. And He has been in the process of delivering me, and I believe that deliverance is almost complete this morning. I say that rather hesitatingly, because I know how evil Satan can be. But in order for God to do anything in my life, He had to isolate me. And that's what He did. I don't know how many of you have seen the film, What About Bob? It's one of our favorites. We've watched it with several friends many times over. Bottom line of the story is the psychiatrist is almost driven nuts by a patient. There's one very funny scene where the psychiatrist is beginning to lose it, and he takes Bob out, ties him up. He's already purchased dynamite, ties him up. He's got him out in this lonely woods, and he's tying him up, and you can see the psychiatrist is really losing it. And then he straps this dynamite to him, and he lights the fuse, and he walks away, and Bob says, oh, I get it. It's isolation therapy. Oh, Dr. Marvin, you are so wise. You are so loving. Well, God didn't quite treat me that way, but He gave me isolation therapy. Now, here's what He did. He stuck us over in Italy, and we thoroughly enjoyed the time with our daughter and her husband and 4 grandchildren. But I was cut off from the rest of the world. There's no English-speaking presence over there, no English newspaper. Mac Northington get a kick out of it. He tried to find a newspaper in Israel, couldn't find one, an English-speaking paper. Well, I couldn't find an English-speaking paper over there for a whole month. And I tell you, I felt cut off. Couldn't get news. We didn't know about the death of Princess Diana till the next day. I'm not the poorer for it. I'm not belittling that. I just want you to know it wasn't costly to me spiritually that I didn't have some of that information. And I've always been a news buff. And I want to tell you right up front that the newspaper began to become my God. I felt like I had to be in tune every morning with what's going on. And the next thing you know, I was listening to all of these voices and hearing all of these things and knowing about all of the issues and overloaded with all this information, but it wasn't information resulting in transformation in my life. And I began to be sucked down into the pit where many of you are right now. We live in an information age. We live in a time of information overload. And I've made, one of the commitments I've made coming back is that I'm not going to get sucked into this any longer of having all of you folks bring up things to me and say, here's an article, I want you to read it, and I want you to get back with me and tell me what you think. Here's a book, I'm giving it to you, I want you to read it, you tell me what you think. I'm not doing that anymore. Somebody said... that this is an age, in fact, it was Leonard Ravenhill, an age where the evangelical church in America is a mile wide and an inch deep. Overloaded with information. I believe that's true, and it can probably be said of many of our lives. We're so shallow because we're just loaded down with information, but it's not information that's done anything to change our relationship with God and draw us any closer to Him and give us the strength that we need in order to survive in life. And I'll tell you, the best thing we can do is put away some of the books, even the good books that you are reading, and wait patiently upon God. If you've got time to wait upon God and then dip into all of the latest books that are coming out, even in the Christian evangelical bookstores, and you can do all that, more power to you. But I'll tell you what, I can't do it. And some of you are waiting for Chuck Swindoll's next book to come out, or Max Lucado's next book to come out, or David Jeremiah, or Billy Graham, or somebody else. All great writers, wonderful men of God. I'm not putting them down. But the best thing you can do is stop waiting for the next book to come out and start waiting on God. And He isolated me in order to get my attention. I realized that I was not sensing the presence of God in me because I wasn't spending time in God's presence. And I confess that to you. I would just sort of hurriedly go through a routine in the morning, but there was no meaning to it. There was no passion that was there. I'd lost it long ago. And God had to just take me away from all of the news and all of the stuff that the distractions that were keeping me from spending time with Him. And He says, all right, Steve, now I've got you where I want you. It's going to take some time. But I want you to listen to me. Wait for me. One day we were with Don and Kelly and our kids up on top of one of the mountains right outside of Ascoli. We never heard a plane over there for the whole month. Not an airplane. We live in one of the, where the planes come down, you know, the air traffic routes. Never heard planes, never heard any boombox. Nobody had their radios on. Cars, most of the cars don't even have radios. TVs, once in a while. It was quiet. We were up on top of this mountain, and I looked down. I saw this beautiful, rustic, scenic view, pastoral scene, side of the mountain, flock of sheep, shepherd, two sheepdogs. Down here, flock of sheep, shepherd, two sheepdogs. No sound. Just the wind. I said, God, this must be what it was like with David. In the quietness, He was just able to wait upon you. Not all the voices, all the noise. We are in great danger in America of spiritual shallowness, no depth, because we're not taking the time to wait upon God. And God isolated me in order that He could get my attention and take away all the things that distracted me. And I only took along a few books on prayer because I realized this was a need in my life before I even began to experience it in reality, what prayer can do in your life. And for the last 2 months, I've been experiencing that. Books like Fresh Wind, Fresh Fire by Jim Cimbala. Many of you read that. I read that twice while we were gone. Books by Andrew Murray on prayer. And I said, God, I'm not going to just read books on prayer. I'm going to put into practice the things that I am seeing in these books. And I want you to speak to me. And God came through. He inclined unto me. And He heard my cry. And He did deliver me out of a horrible pit. Now, I don't want you to misunderstand me this morning. I think there's a lot of great books out there, and there's a lot of great speakers that are on radio daily. But you don't have time to listen to any speaker until you've had time to hear from God. And that's one of our problems. We're just running around sharing information, but it hadn't transformed our lives. A lot of books being written on marriage, but are the marriages in America any better for all these books that have been written on marriage? I tell you, better than reading a book on marriage is for you and your wife or you and your husband to just get alone with God and begin to say, God, what do you want to do in my life? You'd be amazed at what it'll do to your marriage. Well, I was in this pit. In fact, I'm reminded of the Easterner that came a number of years ago to the States, and he said, he observed after seeing Eastern Europe, and I've seen it now and I know what he's talking about. He said, you people in America are rich in information, but poor in commitment. He said, we in Eastern Europe, we're poor in information, but we are rich in commitment. And I saw that and I said, God, I don't know how many days I've got yet to live or how many years you're going to give me, but when I get to heaven, I know you're not going to ask me if I kept up with all the latest trivia on Princess Diana or if I've kept up with this or that, but you're going to want to know about my commitment, where my heart was, and if I have to choose between being the best informed pastor in San Antonio or Texas, or if I have to choose between being the most committed pastor in San Antonio, God, I want to be the most committed. And if you have to make a choice between the two, you better choose the latter too. Now, what God did to restore me, and I want to share this with you because it was a beautiful journey. We went with Mike and Kathy Uno from Salzburg, Austria, all the way across Austria to Hungary, all across Hungary. I'd never been in a formerly communist country before. I wasn't expecting to see what I saw. When we got to Romania, it was even deeper into the pit. God was literally taking me into a physical pit. All across from Romania, we traversed from one side to the other. Old vehicles. In circumstances that you cannot imagine here. 90% of the people still farm with oxen and horses. Ox-driven vehicles. Wagons, I should say, not vehicles. Horse carts, they're all over the place. Broken down trucks, wherever they break down on the road, that's where they stop. They're under the trucks repairing them. Cars, most of the cars are barely operable. We stayed with two young missionary families on the way. I tell you, all of you young people here this morning, you that are young married, whatever you're living in, it's far better than what these couples are in. And they're there by choice. They're there because they want to make a difference in the lives of people in Eastern Europe. They've counted the cost, and they're willing to put aside all of the benefits of living in America with all of its affluence and go over there and to commit themselves for a long period of time to reaching the Eastern Europeans while the door is open. We finally arrived in the Uno's apartment after 3 days of travel in Bucharest, in the heart of one of the dirtiest cities in all of the world. We arrived on Connie's birthday, September the 14th. That was how we celebrated it. When I got in there, I thought, Lord, I cannot live in this place for the next 5 days before we go into Braille. I can't do it. Now, you may say that's really overemphasizing. No, it's not. I said, Lord, I can't do this. It was on a busy intersection where these old, antiquated streetcars, electric streetcars, were coming by at the rate of at least one per minute, and the whole apartment would shake, and we were up above this electrical store. And they had to get all of the rats out of the apartment before they could move into it, and it's just a dirty, dungy place, and the air was so dirty because they have no emission controls over there, and the fumes, you could just see this gray blue in the air. And they told me furthermore, Steve, you can't run over here because of all the wild dogs. And that's always been my release physically, to be able to run. And I said, Lord, I need to get out and be able to do something. But I realized seeing all of these packs of wild dogs, 600,000 dogs they estimate in Bucharest alone, packs of them lying around. They're victims of the revolution, Ceausescu and the revolution in 1989. And what happened was these dogs were once owned by people who lived out on farms and in private dwellings, and all at once Ceausescu, in order to better control and monitor the goings and comings of the people and where they were in their thinking, he had the Securitate forces monitoring all these people, and they could best monitor them if they removed them from all of their private dwellings and put them up in these high-rise apartments, which are nothing more than ghettos. And the people could not take their dogs with them, so the dogs were left to fend for themselves, and they've just multiplied and multiplied. And you can walk by them, they don't bother you, but if you run, you get their curiosity. And I knew I'd best not run. One of the Campus Crusade missionaries got chewed up pretty badly because he tried it. And so here I am holed up for 4 days. Mike and Kathy, I said, you got any good reading on Romania? They said, we got two great books that are recommended. I ended up reading both of these thick volumes on Romania. One on Hungary, just because I wanted to be better informed. I couldn't put them down. God gave me an appetite for that. In the process of reading these secular books, God was beginning to do something in my life. I began to see, Steve, you are so blessed when you look at what some of these pastors have been through here in Romania. And it gave me an identity with the pastors and with the groups of people that I would be speaking to later on, that they felt like I could identify with them. I knew something about their history and their recent sufferings. And so I spent the first 4 days just reading these books and devouring them. The following Saturday, we got on a train and we headed out to Braille, a 3-hour train ride with AC and Marilyn Johnson and Lanny and Melba Green, who were there in order that they might wire the medical clinic, which God has so marvelously provided. And Steve Van Cleve, one of our doctors here, spearheaded that. And being over there and seeing that, I can only thank God for Steve Van Cleve and for AC and Lanny and others who've been over there and have been involved. Many of you have. And they went over to wire the clinic because of all the drugs that have been donated, to protect them, and secondly, security-wise, to wire the training center that God, through you people, has built, and it's known throughout all of Romania and all of that part of the world, what God has done through a church called Wayside Chapel in the West that came and saw and observed and became burdened and promised and then came back and fulfilled their promises, which most churches haven't done. And that was the only reason I was allowed to speak where I was, because of your faithfulness. You people are so good. A training center has cost $900,000 to develop, and out of that, you folks, whether you realize or not, have given over $500,000 towards it. And when I was introduced at the pastor's conference, they couldn't say enough about what Wayside Chapel had done. And this training center is now being used to reach out to people all throughout Eastern Europe. They have 25 men that are already signed up to study there this coming fall. And Pastor Joseph, even before the revolution, had discipled many of these young men. I spoke in one of their churches one Sunday morning. Large church, 400 people, a brand new church. And the pastor wanted me to speak. And I spoke that morning and then in churches the following Sunday and both Sunday nights. And before I spoke, Connie sang. And I tell you what, I got to say this. I've never heard Connie sing any more beautiful than she sang over there. And she sang a cappella. But God really used her. We were without heat most of the time, and it was cold, down in the 40s, maybe up in the 50s in the daytime. We had summer clothes. We were without hot water most of the time, and we were without water some of the time. And we had already begun to be impacted by all of this. When one morning, Connie and I are laying there, and we normally don't sleep against each other. I'm telling you some really intimate stuff now, but we were sleeping against each other, trying to keep warm, and all night long we'd just sort of turn and we'd have our bodies against one another. And we're laying there one morning and I said, you know, dear, we're really going to have to make some changes in our lives when we get back. I said, you know, the first change we're going to have to make is we're going to start bathing again. Our most memorable ministry came after spending a rather wild ride with a driver who is a good driver as Romanian standards go, but 11 hours across Romania from one side to the other. And I'll tell you what we were in for was we noticed that the gas tank was down to where it needed gas. And we said, don't you think we ought to stop and get gas? He spoke very broken English and he said, oh, the light's not on yet. Now that was sort of a harbinger of things to come. Most of the cars over there don't have everything functioning on them. Most of them do not have all the windows in them. When we were picked up, we didn't know what kind of car was going to pick us up or whether there would be a car or a horse or an ox out there waiting on us. But God managed to get us around. And one day we're with Joseph and I say, Joseph, he's in this old Volvo that's kind of broken down. I said, Joseph, one of the windows is out of the back and we're feeling all this cold air. I said, Joseph, how many cars do you have? I said, how big is your church? Now this is a sister church that we've supported. He said, oh, probably 500. I said, Joseph, how many cars do you have in the church? Because I didn't see a lot of cars. But the church was full. The first Sunday night I spoke, people were standing outside listening through the open windows. The balcony was full. People were standing in the back. And then they told me afterwards that people were back here behind me. Me, listening. They make it there. I said, Joseph, you have 500 people. How many cars do you have in the church? He said, 10. And then with a twinkle in his eye, he said, only 6 of them are running right now. I got so burdened for this young pastor, Mario, who didn't even have a car, and yet he's shuttling people around here and there with whatever transportation he can get, tried to work with the young people, and Pastor Joseph. I became so burdened along with AC and Marilyn and Connie and Lanny and Melba that I said, God, we got to do something to get these folks cars. And it was sent out in an email, and it was sent to a number of people, and lo and behold, last Sunday, Ted shares with me on Monday morning, Ted Omby, that God provided for that need. Somebody gave $5,000 seeing the need and being sensitive to this leading of the Spirit. I said, God, you're so good. I didn't even need to come back and say anything. You're so faithful. He really is faithful. But I want to tell you, I almost came home and kissed my 84 Mazda pickup. You thank God for what you have. I'll tell you, we live in one of probably the most discontented, unsatisfied, certainly people of this present day. Always reaching, grasping for something more out there, thinking that's going to bring us happiness, because that's what our society is telling us. You need, our society is really built on the principle of creating discontentment so you'll go purchase something more. And I think as Christians, we got to say, enough is enough. One highly unforgettable moment I share with you, because I'll never forget it. Connie and I sensed as we came in before these 1,200 or so pastors and missionaries that they're wondering, who is this guy that's coming to speak to us? This was a Baptist conference, and he's not even a Baptist. I mean, that was our thinking. And he's here. This couple from America, what do they think they have to offer us? And I'm sitting up there behind this large pulpit with about 6 other guys, and Connie had just, I think she was getting ready to sing, and they were introducing her. And my interpreter, who happened to be the same interpreter that interpreted Billy Graham the times that he was in Romania in the middle 80s. He was the best. He's the best interpreter they have. And when Joseph told me he was going to be my interpreter, he said, he's the best. He's the best. And this man leaned over to me, and here's what he said. He said, what are you preaching on tonight? I said, I'm going to preach from Acts 1. On the 3 great motivating factors behind missions. The resurrection of Christ, that He really does live, the sending of His Spirit, that He empowers us for witness, and thirdly, the second coming of Christ, that He's coming at the end of this age, and we're going to have to give an account. Well, I thought it sounded pretty good. He turned to me and he said, now don't insult the intelligence of these men. He said, they are men of great spiritual depth and men of great learning. A lot of them have spent time in prison. They did nothing but read while they were there. And he said, too many speakers come in from the West and they speak on John 3:16. God so loves you. They speak down to the men. They don't realize the depth that's here. And he says, don't insult them. He said, they need meat, not milk. I don't know if you've ever spoken in front of a group of people, but I'm saying, Lord, do I have meat or do I have milk? I don't know what I've got here. I said, God, you got to help me through this. I don't know. Maybe there's something else you want to share through me, but I'm just going to be available to you. And I got up there and I just sensed the Spirit take over in a wonderful way. Even told him a couple of jokes that translated. You'll appreciate that. They loved him. And I said, guys, I'm not going to tell you something you don't already know. We don't need to be told things most of us know everything we need to know to live a life of godliness and to do what we must do. That's the problem. I said, I immediately put them at ease, and I went on, and I just sensed the Spirit of God so leading, and the interpreter and I really got into sync, and he was enjoying it, and I was enjoying it, and 45 minutes later, I finished. And in front of all those men, he embraced me. Tears streaming down his face, he said, please forgive me. Forgive me. And then the head of the Baptist Association came up and did likewise. And then they had all of the people there break up into groups of 4 or 5 and just pray and recommit themselves to what they had heard during those 45 minutes. I said, God, you're so faithful. Thank you. you did that, I didn't do it. And then they cleared the calendar so that I would have another opportunity to speak to them the following day. And I was just so blessed to sense that God was speaking. And these men are men who suffered. I really felt so burdened for so many of these guys. Our interpreter, his church, back in the middle 80s, during an Easter celebration, because it wasn't sanctioned by the government, they heard these trucks roar up outside, and they threw these giant hooks through the windows that were attached to ropes, and then the trucks pulled away and pulled all the windows and sides out of the building. We don't know what that's like here. Pray to God we never will. Last Sunday night we were there, a fellow came up to us, and Pastor Joseph, he was there just particularly because he knew we were there and knew what Wayside had done, and he wanted to meet the pastor of the church. And I felt so honored by that, and Connie did too. Just a little fellow, 75, maybe 80 years of age, pure white hair, just looked like a saint. And Joseph introduced him as the head of the Lord's Army, which is the evangelical wing of the Orthodox Church over there. And he said, Steve, this man spent 10 years in prison for preaching the gospel. He took Connie's hands and kissed them. And we both had the thought at that moment, we're not worthy to kiss this guy's feet. Men of depth, men of commitment. I said, God, I want to be a man of commitment. I don't want to be an inch deep and a mile wide. I want to be a man of depth from here on out. Far too many churches have come in and they've promised things to the people over there and then they haven't delivered. And God has delivered through Wayside. There's still a need for a boiler to provide heat for these people. We were freezing in there. And it's a need of $40,000 to provide for this boiler. And the only reason it's still needed is because a church in South Carolina promised it to them and never came through. But God is so good. Now, I want to just share in closing what I've learned, some things I've learned. It might be helpful to you that are in the pits and you're going through some deep waters right now and you're in that roaring chasm and you're disoriented and you've lost your way and you've lost your passion for God and you've lost your compassion for people. I want to reassure you that God is so faithful. He is so loving. He's so wise. His timing is perfect in every way. Whatever you're going through in your life, His timing is perfect. He knows what He's doing. Sunday night we were there. Church was jammed, as I mentioned moments ago. Just before Connie sang, they had another gal sang, and she was singing in Romanian, obviously. Beautiful little voice. And I thought, what is the song she's singing? And then I realized it was the Romanian version, In His Time. In His Time, He makes all things beautiful in His time. Lord, please show me every day that You do just what You say. You make all things beautiful in Your time. And one day, I happened to see meet a couple that were there from Spokane, Washington. They know Sonny and Judy. I don't know if Sonny and Judy are here this morning. I know they were at the wedding last night. And they're going to be at one of the services, I think. But anyway, they know them. And their names are Leo and Lynn Hutchins. And he's a retired school administrator. And he's giving a whole year to be over in Romania just to help them get their library and the school set up that's so strategic for all of southeastern Romania. And one day he said, I want to talk to you, Steve. And we're standing there and he's a big guy and he's kind of looking down at me and he starts to get really emotional. I had this happen several times. I'm going to be sharing these stories with you, but not all this morning, so I can keep you crying for the next month or so. But he starts crying. He said, Steve, I'm going to tell you something. You tell your people this. He said, there was a period of time last spring I was ready to quit. Linda and I were ready to go home. We decided the money was exhausted. This thing wasn't going any further. God wasn't in it. He said, I was discouraged. And he said, the very day that we were making the decision to go home, a check arrived in the mail. And he said, guess who it was from? Wayside Chapel. I said, thank you, God, for this body, for their faithfulness. God's timing is so good. Most important work that we have to do, folks, is to wait upon God. You don't have time to do anything else until you wait upon the Lord. And we learn to take time with Him. Our lives are always going to be shallow. We're never going to be usable to Him until He becomes real to us. You've got to simplify your lives. We've made some choices. I came back and I realized after 2 months away and picking up the newspaper that nothing had changed. It's the same old political issues. They're still talking about Whitewater investigation. Costs are just a little bit more, but nothing's really changed. I didn't miss anything. And the first day I'm back, they deliver a paper, and I thought, this is the same stuff that they were talking about 2 months ago. I called down and said, forget it. I don't need this. I don't need the distraction. I'm not saying let's bury our heads in the sand and be ignorant, but there are so many different sources from which we can get a recap of the news in 5 minutes. Why not take 5 minutes every day and listen to the news and then spend the rest of that time that you would give to the news waiting upon God? You'd be the richer for it. We listen to talk radio and all of these things. And what do they do to you? I know what they do to me. They make me angry. You listen to the news, it makes you angry. It makes you angry about issues you can't do anything about. And it destroys our sense of peace and God's presence in our lives. He doesn't expect His people to live that way. Don't get so caught up with materialism. We're living in a day right now when I believe there's an opportune time. So many of us, many of you, you have reaped great rewards in the earthly investments and on Wall Street and all these things. Don't be swept into a state of euphoria that's going to be forever. It can't. It's an opportune time now for God to be able to use resources to get the gospel out to the rest of the world. And for many of you, probably the first thing you did when you woke up this morning is go to see how your investments are doing. Did you ask God, how are my heavenly investments doing? Wouldn't that be a better question, a better thing to do every morning? Lord, what do you want? Your resources, they're yours today, and how do you want to use your resources today? I know this has impacted Connie and I, that we're never going to be quite the same in how we look at things. I don't want you to be the same. John Wesley said, I only value the things that I have by the price that they may gain for eternity. No wonder God used John Wesley. I only value the things that I have by the price that they may gain for eternity. My trip into Eastern Europe gave me this observation that they have done so much with so little, and we have done so little with so much here in America. You get a raise, don't think about what you can buy with it, what you can do with it. Think about how God can use that in other parts of the world. We are on the right track as a church, and I believe God now is wanting to deepen us in our relationship with Him and in prayer. I close with this illustration. It's a story that comes from the last century when a tourist from the States visited the famous Polish rabbi Hafez Haim. And he was astonished to see that the rabbi's home was only a simple room filled with books. It's all the rabbi had in his house. And the only books, the only furniture was a table and a bench. We saw houses, we saw apartments just like that. We wondered, number one, why did they have us over here? They don't have anything to give us, and they furnished the most wonderful meals. Didn't have chairs for everybody. But they still entertained us. The only furniture this rabbi had was a table and a bench. Tourist said, Rabbi, where is your furniture? Rabbi said, where is yours? Mine. Tourist said, I'm only a visitor here. And the rabbi wisely said, so am I. So am I. The greatest tragedy in human experience, according to Malcolm Muggeridge, the British writer, is to feel at home here. If you feel at home in this world, you are of all people to be pitied. God has us here for a brief time to take the resources that He gives to us in order to channel them to meet the needs of a world that is quickly going to hell. And one of these days, we're going to stand before Him and give an account. I will have to give an account. I want us to take a few moments here. And I want you just to get alone with the Lord. Say, God, what do you want me to do in view of what I've heard? What distractions can I cut out from my life in order that I can begin to hear your voice in the midst of all of the voices, this noise, unceasing noise in our society? And then secondly, God, you've blessed me with so many resources. I mean, the average salary over there, folks, even in the pastors, $50 a month. We find ourselves giving out gifts because God had given us additional money that we never used in the first part of the trip. And we found ourselves just wanting to give to these men to meet needs, realizing that in many times it may represent 2 or 3 or 4 months worth of salary. We've got so much and so much to give. What does He want you to give? First of all, your life, your time. Say, Lord, I'm right now going to make a decision. You know the best tribute you could pay to me this morning would not be to come by and say, oh, what a wonderful message. No, you leave here saying, oh, what a great God. And God, I'm going to make some changes in my life because of what Steve shared this morning. I would be so honored if weeks on down the road you come up to me and say, you know, I've made changes in my life because of what I heard. God is so good. He's so faithful. We're just going to get quiet here for a moment before we close. Father, I know I've tried to share things that You've done in my life. It's taken months. And it's very hard to be able to assimilate them in our lives and expect You to do something dramatic here, but it can be the beginning of something wonderful. I look back and see the turning points in my life and experience, and I thank You for them. And I can see Your good hand, Your sovereign hand, Your goodness, Your faithfulness in every area of my life. And I stand before You and stand before the people and say that I am not disappointed in You, Father. I still have some of the same disappointments in my life, but I'm not disappointed in You. There's no disappointment in Jesus. And I give You praise. And I ask for any that are going into the pits this morning, or they're in the pits, they can't get out, may they see that their only hope is to wait upon You. I thank You for this congregation. God, I just love every one of these people. I've been so reaffirmed last night by the great number of people that were here, even out at the wedding, and just to hear so many of them. It's been such an encouraging time for Connie and me. And You're just so faithful, Father. We love You. Thank You. Thank You for Your presence here. Spirit of the living God, fall afresh on me. Spirit of the living God, fall afresh on me. Melt me, mold me, fill me, use me, Spirit of the living God, fall afresh on me. I wanted to allow more time for prayer this morning, but obviously I went over. But I would challenge all of you this week, even if it's 5 minutes that you haven't been spending with the Lord, give Him 5 minutes. For some, it may be 10, 15, 20, 30 minutes. Say, God, I'm not going to have noise on. I'm not going to have the radio on. I'm not going to have the TV on. I'm not going to be looking at the news. I'm just going to spend some time in Your Word. I want to hear what You have to say to me. It may take some time, but the psalmist said, expectingly, I expected. Waiting, I waited. And God answered, and He will. And that's the key to deliverance from the pit. God bless you. Have a great day. And it's great to be back here with you this morning.